Hey, sister girls, welcome to another episode of the Sister Girls Podcast. On this episode, we are back with Insecure Episode 2. We are going through each episode, me and Jarrell Brandon. We're going to break these episodes down, have conversations that you've probably had in your living room, you probably had at your job on your lunch break. But, you know, we're going to delve into it a little bit more. You should re-watch the series if you missed anything. You can watch it on Amazon has HBO, so you can kind of watch it on there. If you have HBO, obviously you can watch it on demand. And then I think that's about it. I'm not sure if they're showing it anywhere else. The new season will start I believe this summer. All right, so hey Jarrell, we're back. This is episode 2. It's called Messy as Fuck, and we pick up off when I believe Issa has kissed Daniel. She's now staying with Molly. She's not leaving, and she doesn't want to deal with her problems. So if you want to take the, I know the last episode, I kind of like led the way. So this time I'm like, you can lead the way, and I'll follow.
So yeah, to kick it off right there, she was avoiding her problems, like flat out. She didn't want to go home. She ran into Lawrence and the Rite Aid. And it was so funny because what I took away from that was, like, he really standing there trying to, like, you know, confront her on the issues and kind of talk about it. She's worried about appearances, like, oh, I want to be a black couple at Rite Aid arguing. Like, it's not that serious. Like, we could, like, have a conversation about it right here. And she didn't want to talk to him about it. But the crazy part about it is if you rewind mentally in your head, right before that, she was in the car. And she was pumping herself up. She's like, yeah, I'm about to go in here. I'm about to tell him what I want. I'm about to da-da-da. And then she just flaked. And you see it more and more throughout the season that's how she is. Like, she doesn't speak up. She doesn't tell him exactly, like, what it is she wants, how she's feeling. And I think that's going to be part of the problem. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. I feel like, I mean, yeah, you're actually right. You're absolutely right about her kind of running away from everything. But I do think that she's still on this whole, like, she want to be, like, take charge of her life. One of the parts that I actually felt a little bit for her is when she was having a conversation with Molly at, I think it was lunch or something like that. And she was just basically saying how she wants to go back to being the girl who wasn't afraid. And I think that, I don't know if people missed that or they kind of like glossed over it, but that's one part that really stuck out to me. And I feel like that's why she's kind of making a lot of decisions the way she's making them, because she feels like she's not herself or what she once was. And I think that, I don't know, a lot of people don't tell you that growing pains doesn't stop at like the teenage years or even your 20s or whatever. It kind of progresses a little bit, because when you're like in your early 20s, your late 20s, and even when you start hitting your 30s, you miss the carefreeness that you once, you know, you had or once embodied or whatever. And I think as adults, we do get a little more fearful, you know, because now we have bills, we have a life, some of us have children, some of us have spouses, and you're trying to get that old thing back. You know what I mean? You're trying to go back into this period of time. Like maybe if you went away to college or the college years, you're trying to relive that moment of feeling like you can do anything and nothing's going to stop you. But she has to kind of like wake up and realize that you can still do anything, but you have to, I don't think she's mentally caught up to the reality that she's older. She is smarter. She's just choosing to try to like revive this type of lifestyle that she thinks she doesn't have anymore. Because, you know, if you look at her job, she's not doing so well in her job. She kind of bombs the presentation. And then it's like her relationship is like pretty whack. And then, you know, the whole idea of like when you graduate college, you get a good job, you live a decent life. I noticed that too when Lawrence is coming from the Rite Aid. They don't live in a great area because their next door neighbor is definitely in a gang. So like all of that into taking that into consideration, I was like, damn, that is true. Like, you know, they sit up there struggling and you don't realize that nobody tells us that when we graduate from college, there's a struggle that happens. You got sold that whole dream of, you know, by this age, you're going to have a house, a husband, everything's going to be perfect or whatever your version of perfect is. And now I think that her reality, she's like, she can't really handle it. And so she's trying to be like, you know, badass, but that's not even who she is at this moment. You know what I mean? If that makes sense.
Nah, it's so funny because I'm sitting here and I'm shaking my head and I want to like be like, yeah, you're right. Because one, we do get sold a dream, like graduating college. So, and you know, another dynamic that goes into that is like, not only does she graduate college, she has a job, but she also has like a man, a real quote unquote relationship. And it's like, those are the parts of like life that you feel like your life is coming together. But in the real grand scheme of it all, it's slowly coming together. And we all of, I know I've been there, I can't speak very, but I know I've been there, where it's like small parts of your life is coming together and you're starting to slowly feel like, yeah, I made it. And then it's just like life smacks you upside the head and you realize like, yo, I haven't. Because you're right, they don't live in a nice neighborhood. She's realistically working in a job that where she, I think she likes it for the fact that she's giving back, but she's not really connected to it. She's battling, you know, being the black woman in the office around, you know, kind of white people who, like, in some cases seem like they have that, like, you know, savior complex. So I get it. Like, I see where she's at, and I've been there, you know, even from the male perspective. The only thing I wish she would have done is more control of it. Like, last night I actually was at a presentation where this senior vice president at Macy's, black man, he said something. He was like, you gotta control the controllables. And he was like, you know, you work hard and you can control that. And I feel like there were things like going on in Issa's life that she could realistically control. She could have controlled Lawrence, like, you know, stepping up more. She could have controlled you know, given, you know, a badass presentation. So, like, this is, like, this moment where I just feel like I wish she would have just, like, taken more charge and just, like, would have went full speed ahead. Like, for me, when she's talking to Molly and she's talking to Molly in the nail salon about what she wants from Lawrence, and she's just like, you know, some days I want him to fuck the shit out of me, and I'm just like, why you never told him that? Like, why you ain't never tell him that's what you want? And that's what I feel like she should be doing. Just telling him what she wants and just letting him know, like, listen, this is where I'm at in life, and it's not everything that I want, but this is what I need here and now. And either you're going to help me work towards that, or you just need to go.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I can agree that she's not being proactive. I think she's kind of letting certain things just slide by, and then her proactiveness is in like the wrong area. So like kissing Daniel, she was proactive about trying to rectify her relationship, just not with her partner. She just went outside of her relationship. So I feel like she's trying to be proactive about changing her life, but she's doing it in the wrong way. And I think a lot of us do that. I think that's why this episode was really good, because I'm like, wow, you sit and you're able to like watch the actual steps people make when they make the wrong decisions because they're trying to like run from something else. So her case, like, she's really trying to get over this whole hump of everything in my life sucks, like, you know what I mean? And I guess once upon a time it didn't suck, so they're not that old, so I'm gonna just say that it didn't suck when she was in college. So she's trying to get that back, and it's just like she's doing all of the things that a person would do to change their outcome, but she's just not doing it with her boyfriend. She's not actually doing it with her job. She's doing it, like, everywhere else, and it's just, like, crumbling. And on the other flip side of things, it was a lot of things that, I guess, came to the forefront, like, even with Molly and, like, her. She's doing the same thing. If you notice, they're doing the exact same thing. So for Molly, she's never actually working on herself. All she is working on the outside of everything. She's like, oh, if I just go get my nails done, hair done, everything did, I'll feel better, so I'll be better. Yeah. And that's not technically the issue. And she's like, you know, I'm going to rejuvenate my vagina. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. But it's like none of that is going to help. And then, of course, you see that she goes and she goes on another date. She goes on a couple dates, actually, because she starts, you know, with the apps, you know, the Tinder. And she goes through a list of all these dating apps. And, of course, she wants to get into the league, which is like this affluent dating I guess, society where you have to make a certain income, whatever it is.
Yeah, I felt some type of way about that.
Yeah, and she's on a waiting list, and it was so funny. She was like, you gotta wait. I went, Issa said, you gotta wait 3 months for some dick. It's like, that's crazy, because they always say you don't have to pay for certain things, water, to have sex, and something else. So it was absolutely a joke, right, back in it. So it's like, you're actually waiting on a 3-month list to try to meet your husband, because that's what I think that she wants. She wants something very stable. And I think Molly's not realizing either is that she's trying to be different without doing something different. You know what I mean? So go ahead.
I hear you on all of that. And the thing I think what we as young adults, like, whether it be on the show, real life, because, like, we vicariously live through each other. TV lives vicariously through people live vicariously through TV. And the one thing, like, I've discovered is that we don't give ourselves, we don't cut ourselves enough slack in situations like this, because realistically, like, they're each just trying to find themselves. They're trying to develop as young adults, because, like, they're still under 30. And we're there, and we don't, like, take a second to be like, yo, it's okay. Like, I'm 27, 28, and I don't have it all figured out. I'm not going to, like, you know, beat myself up too much about it. I mean, there are certain, you know, things that one should be striving for at certain age levels, but if we don't attain them, then it's cool. Like you said, Molly's right now stressing over this whole, like, dating thing instead of taking some time to, you know, just be single and be one with herself and figure that out. And, you know, it's kind of, like, messed up because, like, she's focusing so much on this one thing. Like, I got to find a man. I got to be dating. I got to be dating top-notch brothers. And it's hard, but we don't always listen to our own advice, because as much as Molly and even Issa complains about, like, Issa complained about Lawrence, Molly complained about other men she's dating, I forget who said it, but one of them was like, you got to date a lot of frogs before you find your prince.
Well,
like,
she actually said you got to fuck a lot of frogs before you find your prince, but I'm going to let you finish.
I mean, it's about the same thing. But yeah, so it's like, keep that in mind, like, as you progressing forward, like, you got to go through some trial and error before you, like, really find that shining moment. So we got to start cutting ourselves some more breaks, and I think Issa should do that with herself. She should do that with Lawrence. Molly has to definitely do that with herself, because, like, she just all screwed up in the game, to be honest, and I don't know where she go from here, because, like you said, she waiting 3 months to get into this pedestal league where it's, like, supreme, you know, men that she's going to be dating. And realistically, we all know in real life, this is real life, we know that it really don't turn out that way.
Mm-hmm.
Just being honest.
One of the things that I did like was, like, the cultural thing that she brought into it. Like, I don't, once again, I always say it's like I rewatched it. And even though I breezed past through it the first time when I watched it, you know, at her job, at Issa's job, the whole idea of them, of, like, people who are white trying to help black inner city kids and trying to really say what they should do. And it was so funny because I did catch one joke when she was like, we should just listen to Lemonade or watch Lemonade, then go eat at Lemonade, and just, you know, that'll help them become better. It's like, it's so funny that her job is to help black inner city, you know, youth. And you have a bunch of white people, or not necessarily white, but people who have no idea who these children are, and they're trying to say, this is what they should do, this is how they think, and this is what they need to help them be better. And, like, the cult, like, they couldn't be further from the truth. And it was so interesting because Issa's sitting there listening to them, like, first of all, I'm black. I'm from the industry. Like, you know, how do y'all come? Y'all literally just sit in a room and say, okay, this is what black kids need to become better people. And I thought it was so great that she, like, put that in there, even if she gently put it in there or made, like, you know, jokes and, you know, about it. It was just so real, because even when they come up with things to market to black kids, it's like, y'all really all just sit in the room and say, well, this is how a black kid probably from Brooklyn in the city, this is what they do. And it was just like, it blew me away, because I know how true it is. No matter if it's a nonprofit organization or a marketing team or whatever, is the idea that you have people making decisions who are not in touch with us at all. And they're, you know, getting it wrong most of the time. Because as you see, when she's going back, like when they're going back and forth of what they should do, the fact that somebody literally just said, we should listen to Lemonade and then go eat at Lemonade. I guess the restaurant must have been called Lemonade and then just be great. And then the other guy was like, you know, I did African dance. They'll probably, it'll get a lot of stress out of them. I'm just like, what?
Like, I was just getting ready to bring that up. When he was just like, yeah, in high school, I took an African-American dance class so I can, like, get in depth with. I'm like, bro, like, you just going to teach them African dance and no context behind it? Like, that's the problem. Like, what? Where'd you come?
And then the other lady definitely was just like, oh, we should take them to the African American Museum or something like that so they can know the struggles of their generation and how great they have. And I'm just like, yo.
Like, what did she say? Like, how appreciative other generations are. Like, it's like, where do you come up? Seriously? But see, and this is the great thing about the show being on, her being, you know, a writer, creator, executive producer, is she really gets to tell the story from another perspective, and a perspective that you don't see too, you're seeing it more and more now, but it hasn't been there for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you, like, from personal experience, I'm not going to, you know, name drop the organization, but I recently was just at an organization where those same type of, like, meetings happened where we're sitting in a room and I'm, like, the only black face in the room, and we're talking about how to message a presentation to a pretty much black and Hispanic audience, and majority of the presenters that, you know, are going to be doing this are white and come from some sort of privileged background, and they're talking about, you know, subject matter that they realistically can't relate to, and not take a real consideration the voices of color in the room that actually have real perspective, that actually have lived some of these, who really know the issue that you're talking about from a view. And I really just sat in some of those conversations like, nah, we not serious. We gonna do this? And then they'd be like, yeah, but you know, and I'd be like, no, I'm sorry, I'm shooting it down because you'll absolutely be wrong. And I think, you know, her working, and I brought up before about her being that black woman in that space and around, you know, the white colleagues. That honestly affects her life in general, her dealings with Lawrence. You know, because I can only imagine, like, you know, I've been in that situation. You know, you want someone to, you know, go home and vent to. You want to call somebody in the middle of the day and be like, yo, these people getting on my nerves. These white people getting on my nerves. They have an all-white meeting about me. You know, you want to be able to, like, vent to someone. And if she doesn't feel that her relationship with Lawrence is growing or is even, you know, beneficial to her at that moment, you know, you kind of don't have that person that you want to go vent to. And while Molly is there, there's still something different between the relationship you have with Molly and the relationship you have with your man, the man that you live with, the man that you sleep next to, the man that you're actually having sex with. So, you know, even that work environment space, like her captioning that on television and being real bold about it, it intertwines with everything going on. That's really why I love this show, because, like, it's so many different perspectives going on, and we need to see it. Like, we need to see it.
Yeah. More of it. We definitely do. All right, so I think we've covered a lot in this episode. I think that we kind of delved into it a lot. So I'm going to stop here because it's going to pick up crazy, because at the end of this episode, Molly meets Jerry. And if you remember, Jerry was a guy who kind of like was there at the lounge, at the club, when she, like, when Issa rapped about Broken Pussy, and she confessed that, oh my God, my best friend is rapping about me. And so we see here that he meets her, which is very interesting how he met her, because Molly is, like, really put together. She always got her hair done. She's always fly. And so she's walking her dog. And I'm like, I didn't even remember that's how they met. Like, she's basically real outside extra regular.
Ice cream or something.
Yeah, she's very regular. And, you know, he actually calls her Broken Pussy. And that's how she turns around. And it's so funny because I missed that when I first watched the season. I probably just forgot about it. That he met her very, like, dressed down. And he was, like, interested in her. And so I think that's another interesting point to note that, you know, sometimes you don't have to do so much. Like, she meets him very chill this time, not so wound up. She was just walking her dog. She really wasn't caring about who saw nothing, because she kind of let, she wasn't thinking about a man. So the time that she wasn't thinking about a dude and trying to impress nobody, he, boom, he comes and he calls her. So I thought that was very interesting too. So
I'm going to add really quickly to that and just say that 9 times out of 10, women can get men just like how she was there. Like you said, she was looking real chill, real casual. You could even say she was looking bummy. She was out getting ice cream, I think, and walking the dog. And he happens to spot her and he's just like, yo, like, what's up? Like, broken pussy, how you doing? And, it, you know, it just, like, it, I mean, it, not to give too much away, but it goes from there. And it goes to show you that, I mean, he did meet her dressed up, but then when he saw her again, she was not. And it goes to show you that, realistically, you don't have to, like, be this always, like, put together, you know, shiny, you know, sparkling, you know, thing. Like, you can be chill, down to earth, like, no makeup on, hair tied. Like, it's okay, because, you know, sometimes you can just come as you are and be fully 100% accepted.
Throwing that in there. Yeah, I totally agree with you. And so we're going to pause it here, and then we'll be back for episode 3, which is going to be crazy because Jerry makes another appearance and you kind of see their relationship evolve up from there. And then, of course, the big boom, and then Lawrence, and also at the end, Issa goes back to Lawrence. So she ends up going back home. She does go back home, and but obviously their relationship is still very... She just sits on the bed. Nothing is actually spoken about. They don't really have a conversation. She's just back. And so...
That's my point, though. Like, say something.
But he didn't say nothing either.
Tell him why you mad. Like, if that was it, just tell him why you mad. Like, yeah, she needs to say something
more. Yeah. So I think episode 3, we're going to see, like, she's not saying nothing. And neither is he. But they are both going to be confronted with a lot of situations that's going to take their relationship on a roller coaster ride. And, of course, yep. Molly and Jerry in their whole situation. And it's going to get good. So I'm actually really excited about the upcoming episodes because it really goes up. Like, it goes up from here. You go...
I want to give Molly a hug.
I want to give Molly a hug, but I also want to tell Molly, like, relax. Like, I really just want her to relax. Same... I want to tell Issa to just... It's okay.
I want to tell Issa to speak up.
And the crazy part is I actually want to give Issa a hug because I kind of feel more for her because I know that... Yeah, because at the end of the day, like, if you... that was one thing I wanted to say, too. When she's in the mirror going back and forth, like, how she's going to pump herself up, she does admit, like, she just says, I love him. Like, and I think she's caught up. She really loves Lawrence. I think she wants to be with him at the end of the day. But also, she's having that what-if moment. Like, what if I don't ever... blah, 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 blah. What if... blah, blah. I guess, like, a lot of people say when they're about to get married, they have, like, when they say the doubt situation of, like, what do you think? Like, if this is it, you know what I mean? So, not saying that they should. But I do think she's going through a lot. Like, she's mentally, like, she doesn't know... I don't know. I'm still, like, rooting for Issa.
Nah, I'm not buying that. Like, you speak up. You speak your piece. Like, you tell him everything you feel.
Yeah, but Lawrence ain't saying things either, so I don't know. So they just...
So if you wanted to say anything about Lawrence, then you could say that. He don't speak up neither. He don't put anything on the
table. I think he's not speaking up, to be honest. I just think he's not speaking up because he feels like he's not at a point where he can speak up. You ever know, like, when you're down and you're out, and you're going through something, you feel like, well, damn, I can't even say nothing because, of course, everybody's going to look at me funny. And I felt like that was shown when he called one of his homeboys and he was about to tell, you know, what his life is like or whatever. But, you know, just when he was about to get there, you know, whatever reason the game came on, he was like, I'll call you back later. But when he first reached out to his friend to see how he was doing, it was kind of like he was just trying to, you know, not really say much because he didn't want to have to, like, even put it out on Front Street. And then also, if you're not doing good in your life and then there's other people around you, it's almost like when you don't have a job and everybody else does. Of course, it's just like, well, damn, I can't really say much. Like, I'm having a bad day. It's like, well, what did you do all day? You watch television? Like, you know what I mean? How was your day? Really bad. And I feel like that's why he's not speaking up so much, because I just feel like he's at a point where he don't feel like he can speak up because of his circumstance, if that makes sense. Because he eventually finds his voice.
So. Yeah. I feel you on that. It's hard. You're right. When you're in that particular situation and you kind of feel like you don't have anything to contribute, and it does make it hard. It just makes it difficult to, you know, really find an opinion. But I don't know. Like, yeah, you're right.
That's why I feel for him, because I know his situation. Of like, you know, you have things that you're going through, but of course people around you just think that, oh, well, you know, you ain't doing shit. Like, you know what I mean? It's just that idea of that feeling. Even if people don't feel that way, it might just be in your head, but it's still that feeling that looms over. So I think that's why he's kind of like, he's just trying to work everything out, because it's like he doesn't need another problem on top of everything that he's dealing with day to day. But I'm going to pause it right here. So thanks again, Jarrell, for, you know, going through episode 2. This has been a great episode, actually. Sister girls, make sure you tune in with us again, because we're going to go to episode 3. It won't be the third podcast, but it will be the third time Jarrell will be back to talk about Insecure. We're going through the whole season, the whole first season. And, you know, make sure you follow me on Twitter, Cherie Writes, and on Instagram is the Sister Girl Next Door and the sistergirlnextdoor.com. If you like this podcast, make sure you subscribe to it on iTunes. Make sure you listen to it on SoundCloud. And, you know, email me, because I always tell people to email me. It's going to be in my blog post. My actual email address is CherieHiff4@gmail.com. And let us know if you like it, if you hate it, if you agree with us, if you don't. I'm sure you're going to start speaking out sooner or later, because it's going to get crazy. All right, so talk to you guys later.
Yeah, it gets crazy.
It does. Next time. Later.
Later.